Okay, we're beginning on the 12 lines up on the bottom of Mem Hei Amud Bet. The Gemara asks, is the period of time in the year prior to the reaching of age, which means for a boy, 13 years in one day, for a girl, 12 years in one day, what happens if they reach puberty before that threshold? What do we say? Do we say it's kilifnei zman? It's as if it doesn't matter at that point in time? Or do we say it's kilachar zman? It's as if they've reached puberty. And the question at hand is that the shtei se'arot, the two hairs that are determination for puberty, are they really hairs? Or are they shuma? They're simply a birthmark, a mole of some sort that has hair growing out of it, but it's not really evidence of the fact that they've reached puberty. So that's the question here, is what happens if they have shtei se'arot before they've reached the age threshold? And the Gemara says about that, the mayochoto, what does it matter? So even nidarim lav kilifnei zman damya, v'lav kilachar zman damya. When it comes to nidarim, it has no impact in terms of lifnei zman or la'achar zman, because in terms of nidarim, you're already qualified during that period of time. That's what we saw, that ki afli hafla samuch leish, person who has the capacity to take nidarim, as long as they're close to the age, meaning within a year of becoming of age, that their nidarim are tofes, as long as they understand to whom they are taking the neder. So it's independent of whether they reach puberty or they don't reach puberty, and therefore it's not a question that has relevance with regards to nidarim. Where it says, Ela le onshin. It has to do with punishment. Are they going to be held accountable for those nidarim? Are they going to be punished for those nidarim that they take, if they violate them, or for any other onesh that might be imposed by Beit Din? My, what's the din over here? Rav v'Rabbi Chanina damrei tarvayu toch zman kilifnei zman. Rav and Rabbi Chanina both believe that it's toch zman is considered to be lifnei zman, as if they haven't reached the age of puberty. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi damrei tarvayu toch zman kilachar zman, that is considered to be as if it is after that period of time, and they will be held accountable for that. Amar Rav Nachman b'Yitzchak b'simanech. The way to remember this is v'zot lefanim b'Yisrael. It's not clear from the quote that he brings what exactly was the siman from this. Rashi brings two possibilities. V'zot is lashon nikeva, and Rabbi Chanina is also lashon nikeva. And therefore, zot lefanim is that Rabbi Chanina has the position that Tochzman is kilif neizman. That period of time is considered to be as if he hasn't reached the age. Although he brings a lishna achrina that shmo shel Rav damar kilif neizman muvla b'tevat is be Israel. Rav's name is subsumed in the word be Israel. The letters resh and bet are found in there, and therefore that's a hint that Rav holds that it's Tochzman is kilif neizman. And the Tosfot Rosh brings actually another way to say it, which is that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was a Levi, and then Zot Lefanim B'Yisrael means the Israelim, who are not the Levim, they have the opinion that Tokzman is Lifnei Zman. And the Agota Bach brings another possibility, which is, V'li Nire Rav V'Rabbi Chanina B'Gematria is B'Yisrael. That the Gematria of Rav and Rabbi Chanina, spelt with a He, is equal to the Gematria of B'Yisrael. And that's what it means, Zot Lifanim B'Yisrael, that they have the position that Tokzman is Lifnei Zman. In order to do that, or to remember that Gematria, I don't know how good a hint it is, because by the time you figure out the Gematria, you could have probably remembered which one was Tokzman Lifnei Zman. But anyway, that's another possibility as to what the hint is from over here. You have Rav, which is 202. Rabbi is 212 with the Vav, which makes it then into 218. So then you have 202 and 218 gives you 420. So 420 plus another 100 from Chanina is 520. And then the Yud makes it 530. And then you have Chet and Hey makes it 13. So that makes it into 543. And then B Israel is also, the Shin and the Resh is 500. The Lamed and Yud is 40, and the Bet and Aleph is 3, so it's 543. So that's the possibility of how this is a hint to their position. Meitiv Rav Amnuna. Rav Amnuna challenges that position and says, Achar Zman Hazeh. In our Mishnah it says, after that period of time, Apapuyusha amru einan yodim l'shem min adarnu. Even if they declare ignorance as to who we have taken the neder towards, or the shem mi yikdashnu, or the fact as to whose name we've taken the ekdesh for, nidrehem neder vekdesham ekdesh. There's no plea of ignorance as to you've come of age. Ha, he wants to infer from that, tokzman kilitnezman, that had it been prior to that period of time, even though they've reached the age of puberty, nevertheless, it's considered to be prior to that time. It's only acharzman that that matters. If neisman, it doesn't. Samalei Rava, Rava thinking that Rav Amnuna's position comes from a diuk out of the seifa, he says, Eimareisha, why don't you just be medayek out of the earlier part of the Mishnah? Kodem hazman hazeh, before this period of time, afopish amru yodimanu l'shem min adarnu, even if they say we know to whom we are taking the nether, or l'shem mi yikdashnu, or to whom we are making this hekdesh, any dream neder, then their neder is not effective. Ben hektesham hektesh, and their hektesh is not effective. Ha! You would have heard for that. Tokzman kalacharzman. As soon as you cross over the threshold age for a year before they reach of age, then it would be considered as if it's good. Lohi, that's not right. Rava katayi. Rava made a mistake. Hutsava Rav Amnuna mi Mishnah yitera kadayi. He's thinking that he's mitayek out of the lashon of Mishnah, but the daik misefa li daik mi resha. Instead of taking a deal out of the seifa, which gives you an implication one way, bimidayek of the resha, which gives you an implication the other way. So Rava thought the deal of Rav Amnuna was in the fact that there's a duplication of the statement in the Mishnah of 13 years in one day and onward. As we saw before, certain of the languages seemed unnecessary. The Gemara earlier on went through each of the languages in the Mishnah and said, why do I need this? Why do I need this? Why do I need this? So one of those languages he feels, which is the language of the Achar Zman, which is obvious, then he didn't need that to be there. And why would you make a diok out of that when you can make a diok out of the earlier part of the mission that is also has a duplication with regards to 12 years and one day? So if you're going to be Medayek from the Seifa, you can just as easily be Medayek from the Reisha, and you have no more proof from the Seifa than you do have from the Reisha. Elohi, Rav Amnuna, Migufa, Midamet, Nitandayek. He's medayik out of the Mishnah itself. Lacharzman echidami. What's the case of lacharzman? Idolo aiti shtei sarot. If he hasn't reached the age of puberty then, katanhu. Then there's no such thing as lacharzman. El alav daiti shtei sarot. And it's clear that he did reach puberty. The time of the lacharzman. And the Mishnah makes it clear that it's only because it's lacharzman who the gamrina la the milte. That then we say that whatever he says is governing or binding. Hatochzman. From that, you would infer that it was prior to that time, kilifnezman, that it has no impact or it has no effect. He is midaik out of the Mishnah, that the Mishnah must be speaking about a case of puberty. Speaking about a case of puberty, it's saying only acharzman is meaningful in the context of puberty. That means litoxman, or before that time, when you cross over the threshold age, it is not meaningful that they reach puberty. And therefore, that's a dismissal of the view that toxman is considered to be acharzman. It seems from the Mishnah that Toksman is Lifnei Zman. Va'oti Meitev Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera also asked the following question on that same position. Ish ki afili dor neder. Matam alomar. Why have Ish ki afili dor neder? Ish, the Rabot ben Gimel Yud Gimel Shana V'yom Echad. And Ish comes to include even a 13-year-old. Sh'afa b'sheno yudel afli neder av kayamim. Even though he has no idea what he's saying or who he's speaking to, his neder is kayam because he reached the age of 13. If he has yet to reach puberty, katanu, he's a minor. It's only because he's reached puberty. That's only because he's now 13 years and one day, because he's classified as an ish. Had he reached puberty before the age of 13 years and one day, kilifnezman, it would have been kilifnezman, tiyufta, that's a strong refutation of the position of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that say that Toksman is Kila Akarzman, that say that reaching puberty before the age of 13 years in one day, or for a girl, 12 years in one day, is meaningful in terms of making them into a gadol prematurely, meaning before they've reached that age. Amar Rav Nachman Kitanaye. It's actually a machloket tanaim. Ben tet shanim shevi betzarot, a 9-year-old that has reached the age of puberty, meaning he has two hairs now that are growing in that area. Shuma, we consider it to be a mole, a birthmark. We consider it to be something that is not an indication of puberty. The child is just too young. Bibentet Badyud Bet Shana Biyom Echad, from 9 until 12, Shuma. The Chachamim believe that's still considered to be a Shuma. We don't take it seriously. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Siman. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, once you crossed over the threshold age of 9, then already any state sarot that you see will be classified as puberty. Ben Yud Gimel Bashana, Viyom Echad, Divrei HaKol, Siman. From 13 years and one day, everybody agrees that it is a Siman. HaGufa Kasha, that whole breita has an internal stira to it. It sits out ages and skips a whole year. It says at 9, then it says from 9 to 12, and then it says from 13 and onwards. That means between 12 and 13, it skipped that whole age group. That's what Amar says. Amar Tebiben Tebiad Yudbet Shanav Yom Echad, from 9 until 12 years in one day, Shuma, Aha Yud Gimel Shana Gufa Siman. That means in the 13th year, from 12 until 13, then it's a Siman, according to the Chachamim. Bahadur Tani, and then right afterwards you write, Ben Yud Gimel Shana Yom Echad Siman. From 13 years in one day and onwards, it's a Siman. Ha, from that you would infer, yet Yud Gimel Shana Gufa Shuma, that during the 13th year itself, meaning between the age of 12 and 13, it would be a Shuma, it would be considered a mole or a birthmark, and not a siman that they have reached adulthood. So you have here, first of all, machloket, chachamim, and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, from the age of 9 until 12. If you have two hairs, is that considered to be puberty? Or is that simply a shuma? Chachamim say it's a shuma, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says it's a siman. Then we have agreement between them, that from 13 years and one day onward, it is a siman. Absent from the breita is 12 to 13. And that's what the Gemara is pointing out, that if you're medayik from one half of the breita, it sounds like 12 to 13 is a siman. You're medayik from the other half of the breita, makes it sound like 12 to 13 is a shuma. So my lav, tenayi. Maybe that's exactly the machloket tanaim. Mar sabar tok zman, kila achar zman. One of them holds that during that period of 12 to 13, it's like the achar zman, and therefore it's classified as puberty. Mar sabar tok zman, kila fnei zman. And the other opinion believes that between 12 and 13, is considered like a shuma, and therefore it's kalif neizman. Mar says, lo, the kuliyama toch zman kalif neizman. Everybody agrees that when you're in that period between 12 and 13, it's as if you are before 12 years old, and any hairs that you see there, at least according to the chachamim, will not be a siman. As Rashi points out, kohanach teirutze mukminen toch zman kalif neizman. All the answers we're about to give all establish the fact that we believe toch zman is lif neizman. And the Balei Tosafot point that out as well, that it seems to be the halacha seems to favor going in that direction, which is toch zman lifnei zman, because of the way that the Gemara leans towards that position. So the kuliyama toch zman lifnei zman v'hidi b'tinoket. They're both dealing with a young girl, Bereisha Rabbi, v'seifa Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. And the difference between them is who's the author or which position is being followed in this breita. We saw yesterday a machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar as to what is the age threshold for a girl and for a boy. Rabbi believed that the age threshold for a girl was 12 years in one day for adulthood and 13 years in one day for a boy. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar thought just the opposite, that the boy was 12 years in one day and the girl was 13 years in one day. That's what the Gemara is saying here. There was speaking about a girl, and Reisha is Rabbi. The earlier part of the Breita is in Rabbi's position that a girl crosses the threshold at 12 years in one day. That's why the beginning of the Breita spoke about 9, and then from 9 to 12 years in one day. After 12 years in one day, everybody agrees it's a Siman because that's the threshold age for a girl. On the other hand, the Seifa that says everybody agrees from 13 years in one day and up that that's a Siman, that's according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who says that the threshold age for a girl is 13 years in one day, and not 12. That's how we will reconcile it. Vibaitema hava betinok. Or can do it just the opposite. The old Breita is speaking about a boy. Vireisha Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The Reisha is Rabbi Shimon Elazar, who believes a boy's threshold age is 12 years in one day. Therefore, the beginning of the Breita speaks about 9. 9 to 12 years in one day, and then 12 years in one day, and onward would be an adult, based on the diok of the Reisha. And that's according to Rabbi Shimon Elazar, that a boy reaches that threshold age at 12 years in one day. The Sefer Rabbi, and the latter part that says from 13 years in one day is when it's definitely a Siman. That's according to Rabbi, who says the threshold age for a boy is 13 years. Vibaitema, haba Rabbi. Or you could explain the whole Breita according to Rabbi, who says a girl reaches of age at 12 years, boy at 13 years. The difference between the Reish and the Seifa is, are you talking about a boy or a girl? The Reish is talking about a girl, therefore it speaks about 9 to 12, and then beyond that age, from 12 years and one day and onward, then she's clearly a siman if she has shtei sarot. On the other hand, the latter part of the bright, where it says it's 13 years and one day is the threshold, that's speaking about a boy. Because there, the boy's coming of age is that threshold age. And then if he sees shtei sarot after that, he would definitely be an adult. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Or you can do it the other way around, which is that the whole bright can be Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Habitinok, the ratio is talking about a boy, because the threshold age in the ratio is 12 years and one day. Habitinoket, and the latter half, the second half of the bright that says 13 years and one day is the threshold. That's talking about a girl. Now the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Siman. Does Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda really believe it's a Siman? Meaning from age 9 years and one day till 12, he says that anything you see, Shtei Sarot, that you see during that period of time are considered to be a sign of puberty, a sign of coming of age, and not a Shuma. Amar Rabbi Kruspidai, Bered Rabbi Shabtai, Vehu Shodan Bo. He only agrees that that's the case if the hairs are still there when they come of age. So if they have a sighting of the hair during that period of time between 9 and 12, according to the way the Bright is reading, then the hairs are still there when they reach the threshold age of 12 years and one day, then it's considered to be puberty. On the other hand, if it falls off before then, that's evidence of the fact that those shtei sarot were not really shtei sarot. Tanya Nami Ochei, we have a Brighta that supports that contention within Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Ben Tet Shanim V'Yom Echad, Shevi Bet Sarot, Shuma. 9-year-old in one day that has Shtei Sarot, everybody agrees from before that age until that age, it's considered to be a mold, it's considered to be a birthmark, it's not hair, that's an indication of puberty. Ben Tet Bad Yud Bet Shana, V'Yom Echad, from 9 until 12 years in one day, V'Odan Bo, and they still are there when they reach the threshold age, Shuma. The Chachamim believe that that is a birthmark or a mole. It's not an indication of puberty. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Siman. He says it is a Siman. Therefore, you see that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda requires two things. Not only did they have Shtei Sarot during the period of time between 9 and 12, but also that they remain in place, or remain intact until they cross the threshold age. Now, Tosafot points out here and before that if you have in the Braita, or this Braita here, that 9 years is the first threshold, which says that it's a Shuma, and then the next one is from 9 years in one day to 12 years in one day, then it makes a little more sense, because then there's until 9, and then there's 9 years in one day. When he enters the 10th year, that's the next threshold age. Although in the Braita, the way we have it here is that it's until 9 years in one day was a Shuma, and then the next part of the Braita brings 9 years until 12. So Tosafot says, if you don't have Yom Echad in that first 9, it makes sense. But if you do have Yom Echad, then you have to say that it's a case where they're still not there when it reaches the threshold age, because Rabbi Yossi differentiates between whether they are there or they're not there. Maybe that you'd have to do that in the Braita that we just quoted. Or it makes more sense that the first statement should be about 9, and the second statement should be about 9 years and one day. So Amar Rava. Hilchata, the aloch is toksman kalifnezman. This is another backup for what Rashi and the Tosafot are pointing out, that the Gemara is leaning heavily in this direction. Here you have Rabbos of Batra, paskening that the aloch is, if it happens to be that they see shtei sarot before the age for a girl of 12 years and one day and a boy 13 years and one day, that that's not considered to be puberty. Rab Shmuel bar Zutra matni la l'shmaita de Rava b'hai lishna. He has this memra of Rava in the following context. Amar Rava, Tana, ko yud bet shana, meme'enet ve'olechet. A young girl, until she reaches the age of 12, has the right to do miyun. She has the right to annul her marriage if she was married off by her brother or her mother, where it was only kedushim derabanan. She has a right to unwind that until the age of 12. Mikan ve'elech, from there to forward, eina mam'enet, she doesn't have the right to do miyun, ve'eina choletzet, but she also doesn't have a right to do chalitza. It says, Agufa Kasha. That statement of Rava is internally contradictory. Amart Eina Memaenet. So you tell me that you can't do Miyun, Alma Gdolahi. The reason you can't do Miyun is because you've now crossed over the threshold from being a minor into being of age. A minor is allowed to perform Miyun. Once you come of age, you're not allowed to perform Miyun. So if you say to me she can no longer perform Miyun, that means she's a Gdola already. Igdolai tachlots. If she's already gdola, she should have the right to do chalitza. Mimonov shach. She's either a minor and can do miyun, or she's not a minor and she's a gdola and she can do chalitza. How come over here she lives in some twilight zone where she's not allowed to do miyun and she's not allowed to do chalitza? B'chitei ma'misap galei. If you want to say according to Rava, he has a safek when you cross over the threshold age, whether you have reached puberty or not reached puberty, that's not true. Because we have chazaka de Rava. Does Rava really have it? Safek? A girl who reaches the age where she should come of age, you don't have to check if she has shtei sarot. Chazaka hevia simani. There is a chazaka. This is chazaka de Rava. It's mentioned in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we assume when a child reaches that age threshold that they've also reached puberty. We don't go and check. We make assumptions that they have reached the puberty. So if that's the case, then we assume, according to Rava, if she crosses over 12 years, she's also a gdola. Why can't she do chalitza? The Gemara says, "Hani mile bistamo." That's only if we don't check. If we don't look, then we assume that if she crossed over the threshold age, she is definitely a gdola. Avahoka debadko velo ashkecho. Lo. So in the case here where they checked and they didn't find shtei sarot, so then we can't assume just because she crossed over at 12 that she now is of age. We will. So the Gemara says then, if we know for certain she hasn't reached puberty, why can't she continue to perform miyun? And then she's a ketana. So if the age threshold is just an age threshold by which we establish a chazaka, then absent the chazaka where we've checked and we know for certain that there is no pubic hair here, then we should assume that she's a ketana. It says, Choshashim Shema Nishru. We worry about the fact that maybe they fell off. That she had reached puberty, she had had the pubic hairs, but then they fell away. So now we're on both sides of the coin. We are saying that you checked, and there are no hairs here. Given that, we can't let her perform chalitza, because she's not for certain a gedola. On the other hand, she can't perform miyun, because maybe she did have pubic hairs and they fell away. So I'm not letting her be a ktana, I'm not letting her being a gedola, because they checked after she crossed over the threshold age and she doesn't have pubic hairs. So Gemara says, Anichu l'man d'amar choshishin. That makes sense according to one who says that that is a chashash that we worry about, the fact that she had pubic hairs and they fell away. L'man d'amar ein choshishin, according to one who says that we don't think about that or consider that possibility, ma'ika d'meimar. How are you going to explain Rava's position in this context? D'itmar Papa amar ein choshishin shem nishru. But Papa believes, or the other Girsus, Rav Kahana, believes that we're not choshesh for the possibility that the pubic hairs fell away. But Papi amar choshishim. But Papi says we are choshesh. So okay, according to Rav Papi, I can understand Rava's position. But according to Rav Papa, Rav Kahana, I don't understand why Rava believes that she can't perform miyun over here, because if she doesn't have hairs, we've checked she doesn't have hairs, she's a ktana. Where it says, Hani milele yanyan chalitza. That's only true with regards to chalitza. Avalinya miyun choshishim. So even according to the one who says in choshishin, that's only true with regards to chalitza. That we don't assume that they fell away and therefore maybe she has a right to do chalitza. But for miyun, we would be choshesh. That the hairs fell away and therefore she would not be permitted to perform miyun and she would be considered or classified as possibly a gedola. Michlal, if you say that about the one who says in choshishim, that means the mandamar choshishim koletzet. If you're going to that, then you're saying that according to this daya, that ein choshishin is for chalitza. But for miyun, we are choshesh. That means the other opinion that says choshishim thinks that you can be koletzet, that you can do a full chalitza. Otherwise, there's no difference between the two opinions. Ba choshishin ba'alma kamar. The word choshishim means that we worry about it. It doesn't mean we think for sure that it happened. Means that we are considering the possibility that such a thing happened. So that would be untenable to say the position of Choshishim, according to Rav Papi, means, oh, you can go ahead and do Chalitza. Because that would be the conclusion if you believe that Ein Choshishim means Ein Choshishim the Chalitza, but we are Choshesh for Miyun, then it implies that the other opinion that says Choshishim means that by Chalitza you can do it for sure. And that is not a position that we can sustain. Ela Olam Tlobadka. He didn't do a check. There was no check of this woman over here. Uli inyan chalitza chayshinan. And for chalitza, we are choshesh. V'chika marova chazaka lemiyun aval chalitza bay v'dika. And when Rava says it's a chazaka, when you cross over the threshold age, It's a chazaka that if you reach puberty, that's the miyun. That's to negate your ability to do miyun anymore. You assume you're not a ktana. Aval chalitza b'yibdika. When it comes to chalitza, there we have to consider the possibility that something has not happened and we need to check. Rava's statement was that when it comes to the threshold age, when she crosses over that age, then she can't do miyun. But she also can't do chalitza. She can't do miyun because of the chazaka of Rava, that when you cross over that age, we assume you've reached puberty. And you can't do chalitza because chalitza is a din d'oraita. And in a din d'oraita, we want you to be certain that this woman has reached of age. Therefore, you're going to have to do a check to make sure that that is the case. And the machloka between Rav Kahana and Rav Papi is after you've come of age. Now we check and she doesn't have pubic hairs, is whether we're chosheish. She has reached the age of puberty and it fell away. And that will have implications with regards to chalitza. Not that the chalitza itself is a certainty or we do it with certainty, but whether we make her do chalitza misafek and whether she still can do miyun to dissolve her marriage. Meaning, do we take into consideration the possibility that after she crossed over the age of 12, she might have had pubic hairs that fell off? The law is that we do worry about the fact that maybe she had pubic hairs and they fell away. That's true when she had kiddushin when she was a ktana, and then her husband, who stayed married to her all the way through, had biyah with her after she came of age. Dika sveka doraita. Because at this point, you're dealing with a safek doraita. Avamikara lo. Before that time, we do not worry about it. Which means that if she crosses over the threshold age, and then her husband has biyah with her, that could have consummated the marriage now midoraita. Until this point in time, the marriage is only midrabanan because her mother or brother married her off and she was a ktana. And you can't create kiddushin doraita except through the father. Father's absent or she's a yatoma b'chaye avia, and therefore there's going to be no marriage doraita because she can't create kiddushin by herself. She's not of age. And others only have that right when it's her father, not when it's her mother or her brother. So she married midrabanan. But if they have bi'ah after she comes of age, that's a consummation of the marriage when she's already a gedola, and that makes it a problem midoraita, or meaning a marriage midoraita. So now, if they had bi'ah after she came of age, over there, we have to worry about the fact that maybe now there's a consummation of the marriage midoraita. Even if she doesn't have pubic hairs now, we might have to assume that there's a safek that maybe there were hairs and they fell away. That's a safek deoraita. And it's suffix doraita, then we're going to have to worry about the possibility that she needs chalitza if her husband died at this point and she was childless. But mi'ikara, before that point in time, if she crosses over that threshold age and they have yet to have bi'ah together, then the same suffix remains in place and you don't have to worry about it. Because if she is a ktana, then mi'un works. So there was never a consummation of the marriage midoraita. They never had bi'ah after the time period where she was a gdola. So here you're dealing with a safek midrabanan. And a safek midrabanan, then the mi'un should be sufficient in order to terminate the marriage. But if she definitely has pubic hairs over here, then even though the original kedushin were midrabanan, there the rabbanan don't allow her to perform mi'un because we might have a fear that if we allow her to perform mi'un when she's already a gdola, then if she had bi'ah, she might still try to perform miyun, and there it wouldn't work. So also the possibility that she consummated the marriage midoraita, and then still will try to use miyun. We don't allow miyun to be used after we establish that she is a gdola, after she has pubic hairs. But here, in this instance where she doesn't have pubic hairs, then the determining factor will be whether she had bi'ah or she didn't have bi'ah. If she didn't have bi'ah, then we don't worry about it, and miyun will still be an effective way to terminate the marriage. If she already had bi'ah, then we will not allow miyun to be the solution to the problem, because now we're in a world of doraita. Because bi'ah, after she reaches of age, would make her married midoraita. Yes, we don't see her having pubic hairs now, so technically that would mean that it's not consummated midoraita, but it's a safek. Maybe she had hairs and they fell away. Maybe she never had hairs. But it's a suffix doraita, and a suffix doraita, We won't allow you to use miyun as the mechanism for terminating the marriage. All right, Amar Rav Huna, hikdish v'achal. If a minor was makdish something and then ate it, lokeh, he gets malkot for it. So here we're talking about a mufla, samuch leish, someone who is a year before they come of age, whereby the Torah includes them in the capacity to take a neder and it be binding, assuming they understand what they're doing. So they're still below the age of where they're going to be held culpable for onshin because they're yet to have reached of age. Nevertheless, Rav Huna says that if their neder is binding, then so is the punishment for violating that neder binding on them, and they will get malkot. And that is because shenemar ishkia flidindur. We learned that from the parsha of Nazir. Says by Nazir, Taberal b'nei yisrael martalem isho isha ki aflidindur neder nazir lazir l'Hashem. From that ishkia flidindur, we learned that mufla samuch leish or a mufla samucha leisha. Both of those, their nedarim, are binding. And then later on in Pashat Matot, when it speaks about the issue of nedarim, it says over there, Ishki dor neder la'Hashem oshiva shua le'esor isar al nafsho lo yachel divaro. Chol yetzei mipiv yatzeh. Person must do what they say they would do, what they promise to do. Nedarim that are binding, lo yachel divaro. You may not profane them. Kol she'eshno ba'aflaah, yeshno ba'al yachel. Anybody who's subject to neder, Hafla'a is also subject to Bayachel. So, Sheinu Bafla'a, Enu Bayachel. If you can't take the nether, then you also don't have Bayachel. Meiti Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Lisuyue the Rav Huna. So Rav Huna Bar Yehuda brought a question, but through the question, it actually turns out to be a proof or a help to this position of Rav Huna. We find that the pasuk equates a katan to a gadol, lezadon shvua, uli isar, uli bal yachel. Three areas by which the gadol and the katan have the same din, meaning that a muflas amuflish has a din like an ish, and that is zadon shvua, if he violates a shvua intentionally, uli isar, which is another form of problem, which is here, ish ki yador neder l'Hashem, o yishava shvua, le'esor isar. So any of those, ule bal yachel, that he also is subject to the din of bal yachel. You would think that if he was makdish something and then was mo'el in that hektesh, that he'd be chayav a korban me'ila. Tamalomar v'zeh ha'davar. Beginning of Parashat Matot, it says, v'edaber Moshe Rashi Matot v'nei Zalimor, zeh ha'davar asher tziva Hashem. This unique din has this special dispensation whereby a mufla samuch leish, someone who's a year before coming of age, has additional requirements over here. And those additional requirements apply, but nowhere else in halacha do we have the same din. And so by mi'ila, which is not included in this parshia, that is not true. So mi'ah. But you see from this, le'isar ulebal yachel chayav. When it comes to restricting oneself, and then being in violation of that by profaning it, that you would be chayav, because they are included in this parsha. Both the kiyidor, neder la'Hashem, oyshava shvua le'esor yitzar al nafsho, lo yechel devaro, chol yotzei mipiv yaseh. That's all included in zeh ha'davar, in this unique din by which you have a special dispensation that a person that hasn't come of age is still within this parsha, or included in this geder of Shvuot Nidarim, and the violation of those Shvuot and Nidarim. So it says, why do you have to say that? Ema li'isur ba'yachel. Maybe ba'yachel doesn't mean you're going to get malkot for it. It just means that if you profane it, you violate an isur, but not that you're going to get the actual punishment of malkot, like Rav Huna says. Isur ba'yachel manofshach. The fact that there's an isur of ba'yachel, you would have known either way. It's irrespective of what you think here. If you think that this special inclusion, that someone who is a year before they come of age is included in the Nidarim, is a din do'oraita, milka nami loki, then for sure you should get malkot, because then the din of mufasa mufleish is do'oraita, If that's Doraita, then Bayachel, the violation, is also Doraita violation, and therefore you should get Malkot. And even though, as the Baal Yisus will point out, in a minute we're going to say there's a possibility that his neder might be binding on other individuals so that they would get Malkot, why is the Gemara so certain over here, if it's Doraita, that he would get Malkot? Tosfo points out, this Dayan, the Gemara, believes that the way the Baraita is explaining Bayachel means there's an Isur and no Malkot. And what the Gemara is saying is that's not possible. If there's an Isur on the Katan, then there's going to be Malkot as well, because Midoraita, there is a violation. There is a possibility. You could have explained that he's not Chayav and Bayachel, not for an Isur, not for Malkot at all. And the only implications would be on other parties. But that's not what the Baraita says, and that's not the suggestion over here, because the Baraita suggests, at this point, the way we're reading it, that there is Bayachel, and this opinion wants to say that Bayachel is an Isur for the Katan, but not Malkot. And if you say it's Doraita, that's not a possible solution. If you think that a Mufla, that year before they come of age, the fact that we include that they're Nidarim, or considered Nidarim, is only a Din Derabon or a Takanah Derabanan, Isur Namileka, then there can't be any Isur associated with it, because the way Rashi explains it over here, the Katan, Lav Bar Kibule Alei Takanta Derabonanu. A Katan doesn't have the capacity to accept upon himself a Din de Rabbonon. So even though he has, according to the Rabbonon, the right to make a neder, that's all he has according to the Rabbonon. He doesn't have the capacity to accept a Takana de Rabbanon that has ramifications then, that he'll be penalized or punished for the fact that his neder is binding. Then of course you have to ask, then what does it matter that his neder is binding? That'll be the next issue that the Gemara will take up. But what you see from here is a chakira that is well known, the difference between dinim d'oraita and dinim d'rabbanan, which is dinim d'oraita applied to the chayfetz. When we say that something's not kosher, when there's something that is tamei mid'oraita, it's speaking about the object itself. The pig itself is not kosher mid'oraita. That's because the chayfetz is impacted by the din d'oraita. The din d'oraita signs the standing or status of the item, and it's either asur or mutar. Whereas the din derabbanan doesn't work that way. A din derabbanan works by saying that even though the item is mutar, the gavra, the individual, is not allowed to partake in it. So even though chicken and milk mixed together is mutar midoraita, the chayfetz itself is not asur, nevertheless the rabbanan said this individual, the gavra, shouldn't partake in chicken and milk that are cooked together. So here you see the same thing, this idea that the imposition of the mufla samuch leish, if it's only the rabbinic in nature, that means that it's a din in the gavra. And what Rashi says is a gavra, the individual, only has the capacity to accept that din derabonon, or the obligations midrabanan, when they come of age. Before that period in time, they don't have those obligations. So now you have what's an interesting dynamic, which is the person who has the capacity to make a neder midrabanan, and it's binding midrabanan, yet they're not culpable because they can't accept the din derabanan. So then who does it impact? Then it impacts on lotana muzarim alav, someone who is of age. Those that are commanded to ensure that the katan does the right thing. Whether that's the parents, whether that's the remainder of the tzibur, or the beitin, those that are responsible for the performance of the katan and his keeping of mitzvot and not violating isurim, they have to separate him away. Meaning that the katan himself is not culpable, but those that are responsible for the katan will be culpable for this, and they are the ones who are then commanded to make sure by Yachel that he doesn't violate this neder. The truth is, as the Baal Yisus will point out, that the bright can't read well, according to those that are mutarim alav, those that are responsible for the minor over here, because then what is the havamino in the bright that you should have to bring a korban? Korban is only an obligation on the individual doing the wrong thing. Not an obligation on those that are responsible for the other party. And nobody would say that the parents or the patron brings a korban for the violation of the minor. And therefore, why is there even a havamina that you would bring a korban? Even though that is a good question, the mother has a better question and didn't bring that up. Shema mina, from this you would conclude, katan ochel nevelot, patron mitzuman alav lahafrisho. From this you would conclude that there is a responsibility when it comes to a katan who's doing the wrong thing, for those who are responsible through the Beit Din, which is the ultimate backstop, where they would have to intervene to stop this individual from doing the wrong thing. And that's a machloket between, which we have in the Gemara and Yevamot, And so whether Beit Din is really commanded to intervene, or whether people that are Muzarim Alav have to intervene to stop a Katan who's doing it on his own or of his own volition, do you have to intervene to stop him from violating an Isur? From the way that you're explaining it now, that would be impactful. Where it says, Hachamai Eskinan, oh, what's the case here? Yon Shehikdish Hu Vakalo Acherim. Until now, we had two iterations of the case. The first case we thought, and we thought that was supportive of Rav Huna, was a case where the young man took a neder, even though he was below the age of 13. He was included because of Mufla Samukleish. His neder is binding. And we think now, if he comes to violate the neder, the Braita says he's in violation of Ba Yachel, Lo Yachel Dibaro. If he's in violation of Lo Yachel Dibaro, he gets Malkot. And that would be like Rav Huna, which says that if you take a neder and you violate the neder, you're going to be Chayav Malkot. Gemara said, no, maybe it's talking about the Isur of Ba Yachel, not the Malkot of Ba Yachel. He's in violation of that Isur, but he doesn't get Malkot for it. Gemara says, you can't say that because that's a Miman of Shach. Either the din is Doraita and you get Malkot, or it's a din Derabanan and there's no Isur. And the Gemara answers, no, you could explain the Braita in an instance where it's talking about those that are responsible for this Katan, that they are Ba Yachel. They have an Isur, and they have to ensure that the Katan doesn't violate the Isur. Gemara says, if you do that, then you come to a conclusion about a bigger machloket, which is, are the parents and the Beit Din responsible to stop a youngster from violating Isurim? And then this would conclude positively that you do have to do that. And we don't want that, because then we'd have an answer to that question, and we know that that question is a machloket, an open machloket. Gemara says, okay, we can figure out another case. It's a case not where he was the violator. It's not a case where he's a violator and he's Chayav Malkot. Not a case where he's the violator and someone else is responsible. But rather, it's a case where he took the neder and a third party, someone else now, is coming to eat the item that he took a neder about, or the hektesh that he was maktish. So that's the case here, and that's where there's Ba Yachel. Ba Yachel is on this individual's of age, that he can't violate the neder of this katan, who's a muflasa mukhlish. That works well if you believe that if the muflasa mukhlish is makdish something, and someone else eats it, that they get malkot, then that fits into the braita, and I understand what the braita is saying about bayachel, and then it's not a proof to Rav Huna. Elamanda mar ein lokim, according to one that says you don't get malkot when it's a muflasa mukhlish and it's a third party eating it. How are you going to explain the braita? The itmar hiktishu v'chalo echerim. We're bringing this machloket that we have a machloket amoraim, which is if he was makdish the item, the muflasa muflish, and a third party ate it. Rav Kana amar ein lokin. Rav Kana says no malkot for that. Rav Yochanan Meish Lakish amrei tavayu. Rav Yochanan Meish Lakish both believe lokin. You do get malkot. Now Rav Kana, who says ein lokin, is midrabanan. That's because the whole din is midrabanan. Vikra asmachta be'almo. And the pasuk itself is simply an asmachto. So then, the braita, when you say bayachel is an isur, it's an isur midrabanan, that he's violating in bayachel, because you don't get malkot for it. And the kra, the pasuk that we're bringing over there, is just an asmachto, because you don't need a pasuk. It's only midrabanan. Then the rabbanan can establish whatever the rules are with regards to this. And the rules that they establish are that if he takes a neder or is makdish something, that the other parties are held accountable for it. Those other parties that are held accountable are only held accountable midrabanan. That means that there are not going to be any malkot over there. It's only going to be a din derabanan, and they're in violation of an iser derabanan. Why did the braita bring zehadavar, which is a pasuk that seems to prove the point? That was an asmachta b'alma. That was just a nice, additional, supportive type of proof, but it's not a real limud that makes it into a din deoraita. So then in the end, the braita doesn't necessarily have to be supportive of Rav Huna, because according to Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, the Ba Yachel over there is not referencing the person who took the neder, so a third party who ate or violated the neder of the muflasa muflish. And according to Rav Kahana, even for the third party that violates, there's no malkot. And the braita is not even speaking at a doraita level. It's speaking at a rabbinic level and saying that at a rabbinic level, you have an isur bayachel. If a third party eats it, no malkot. So in either one of those explanations now, you can say that we have a way to understand the braita. And the braita doesn't necessarily have to be a proof to Rav Huna. That doesn't mean Rav Huna is wrong. Just means that the bright itself in the end is not a proof to Rav Huna. Gufa. So now about this machloket between Rav Kahana and Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Hikdish Rachalo Achirim Rav Kahana Marin Lokim. Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish are married to Vayu Lokin. But my kamiflige. What's their machloket? It seems pretty obvious. Their machloket has to do with Mufla Samachoish. Is that a Dindoraita or a Dindorabonon? Mar Savar, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish believe Mufla Samachoish is the Oraita. It's binding Mina Torah. Binding Mina Torah, then when a third party comes and violates it, they're going to be Chayav Mina Torah, Malkot, for Bayachel. Mar Savar, Mufla Samachoish is Midrabanan. Rav Kahana believes that's only rabbinic of Mufla Samachoish. And therefore, the culpability of those that violated, the third parties that violated, are only culpable mi derabanan. And that's why there's only an Isser Vayachel. There's mi derabanan. There's no Malkot over here. Metiv Rab Yirmiya. Yitoma shinidra. A yitoma, a young girl who was orphaned, either because her father passed away, or she's a yitoma b'chaye avia, where her father already gave up her rights to her, and therefore he no longer has rights to marry her off anymore, that she got married. So if she takes a neder, bala meferla, her husband has the right to unwind or undermine those nidarim, like any husband who has the right to nullify his wife's nidarim through hafarat nidarim. If you say that a minor's nidarim are only binding midarabanan, that means once she crosses over the threshold age of 11, if she takes nidarim, then they're still only rabbinic in nature, then altu nisuim derabanan, vatle nidra derabanan. The nisuim of a minor who is a yitoma, her nisuim are only rabbinic in nature, then I can understand that a rabbinic marriage can undermine a neder midarabanan. You're just dealing on the same level. You're dealing with marriage midrabanan, you're dealing with a binding neder midrabanan. So a marriage midrabanan can allow for hafara, the nullification of a neder that's binding midrabanan. Eliyamarto raita, if you think that mufla samachlish is a Torah principle, then atu nisim derabanan mavadle nidra doraita. How could it be that this individual is married to this girl midrabanan, only rabbinically, there's no marriage midoraita when she's underage and a yitoma. Yet, her nidarim from the age of 11 onward are binding midoraita. How does nisuim dirabanan, as a marriage dirabanan, come and undermine a neder midoraita? And Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel, ba'ala meferla mimonofshach. Her husband has a right to nullify the neder, irrespective. Idirabanan, dirabananu. Like we said before, if it's only rabbinic that her nidarim are binding, then the rabbinic marriage can undermine the rabbinic neder. Idoraita. If it is a dindoraita, katan ochel nevelotu, then she is a minor, and a minor that does a violation, ein beitin mitzuvin alav lafricho. Beitin doesn't have to stop them from doing that violation. So over here, even though she took a neder that's binding midoraita from 11 years and onward, and her husband comes along and nullifies it, his nullification is only a nullification midorabanan, yet the neder is binding midoraita, doesn't matter. Because she violates that nether, that's a ktana violating a nether. And a ktana violating a nether, we don't have any requirement to stop her from violating the nether. So basically we create a situation in which she can violate the nether, even though it's not nullified, because she's a minor. And then we're not going to worry about it. Where it says, v'haki gadla v'achla v'hafaraka maita. Wait a minute. When she becomes of age, she'll continue to violate the neder based on the hafara of her husband before. Now you don't have this dispensation to say she's a ktana, don't worry about it. Now she's of age, and she continues to violate the neder, even though the hafara of her husband was not really effective in nullifying the neder. Amarabba bar Levi, bala mefer la ko sha'a b'sha'a. A husband can continue to be mefer the neder, behu shibal. That's as long as he has bi'ah with her once she comes of age. Or in essence, what we say is that he's made for the neder when she's a ktana, and miman of shach, it works. If the neder at that age is only midrabanan, then his nisuim midrabanan grant him the right to be made for the neder, and the neder's gone. If that type of neder is doraita, then while she's a ktana, he's made for it, and she can violate it because she's a ktana. And we're not going to worry about that. We're not going to stop her from violating the neder because he did hafara. When she comes of age, where it would be a problem, we require an additional hafara by the husband. But that's only after he's at Biyah with her, where there's a consummation of the marriage, Midoraita. Given the consummation, Midoraita, now he's married to a Rabbi Midoraita, he can be made for the Neder, Midoraita, and that will take care of the Neder Doraita that happened while she was a Mufla'a, Samuch Isha. Vaha ain't Baal Mefer B'kod Min. Wait a minute. Marriage allows for nullification, Nidarim, for Nidarim that are taken under the auspices of the marriage. But if she has Nidarim prior to the marriage, getting married does not grant you the right to nullify those earlier Nidarim. So how come over here he has a right to nullify a Neder that she took much earlier, now that the marriage only happened now, Midoraita? So Gemara says, Kidra Pinchas Mishmei Derava. Like the Memra of Rav Pinchas in the name of Rava, the Amar Pinchas Mishmei Derava. Kola no deret, adat bala, he no deret. Any woman who takes a Neder, takes a Neder on the condition or with a built-in condition that her husband will be satisfied or happy with the Neder. So that built-in t'nai gives the husband the right to unwind the Neder. And the truth is, the Baal HaTosafot say that the Gemara should have said Ella over here. The word Ella in the Gemara indicates that we're rejecting what we said before, and now we're entertaining a new possibility. And that's what the Tosafot says over here. It should say Ella Kidra Pinchas Mishmei Derava. Gemara is rejecting what it said before. We don't say there's hafara, and we don't worry about her violating the dinim, and then when she gets married, you know, right, then it can be made for the nether. We're dropping all of that and basically saying, the reason the husband has a right to be made for the nether, even though her nether might be doraita, and their marriage may only be derabonon, is because when a woman takes a nether when she is married, she does it embedded with a t'nai that her husband should be satisfied with it. And therefore, when the husband comes and nullifies it, it shows that he wasn't satisfied, he wasn't happy with it, and that t'nai will then unwind the neder. Amar Abaye, Tashma, Katan, Shelo Hivi Bet Sarot, a Katan who has yet to reach puberty, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Trumato Truma. The Truma that he makes is not binding Truma. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ad Shelo Baal Onat Nidarim, Ein Trumato Truma. That's only true until he reaches the age where Nidarim are binding. But when he reaches the age where the Nidarim are binding, then his Truma is Truma. And once he reaches the age of Anat Nidarim, his Truma is effective, because Truma, in essence, is a type of Neder, the type of Hekdesh, whereby you're declaring something to be or have a certain status, and then it's binding. So once you reach the age of 12, just like Nidarim are binding from that point forward because of Muflas and Muflish, so too Truma should be binding. So Savrua Kasava Rabbi Yossi Truma Mizmana Zeh Do'oraita. Our assumption is that Rabbi Yossi believes that Truma today is Do'oraita, is a Torah requirement. So Iyamart Bishlama Muflas and Muflish Do'oraita. So now, if you believe that the concept of Muflas and Muflish is a Torah principle, then Ati Gavra Do'oraita, Umetakein Tavla Do'oraita. Then an individual, a katan, who's the age of 12, who's granted the right min Torah to take a neder, he has the capacity to take off trumot and fix tevel that is doraita. So you have a doraita solution to a doraita problem. The problem is you need to take off trumot mi doraita, you have tevel mi doraita, and a child who is 12 going on to 13, in that year, the Torah grants him the power of nidarim. That power of nidarim allows him to be mafish truma over here, and to solve the problem. Again, we saw that machloket between Rav Kana and Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So this would favor that opinion of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish that it's muflas hamuflish is doraita. Then if you say the rabbana like Rav Kana, ati gavra the rabbana metakein tavla doraita. If you think that muflas hamuflish is only a rabbinic institution, why would you think that a rabbinic institution of Muflas and Muflish, which allows him to take off Shuma, should solve your problem of Tevel Doraita? And even though the truth is that Rav Yehuda's position is actually supportive of Rav Kana's contention that it's only Midorabbanan, nevertheless, the Baal HaTosafot suggests that maybe even Rav Yehuda believes that Muflas and Muflish is Doraita, but only the Chumra, not the Kula. And that's why he doesn't allow him to be Mitakein the Shuma over here. Not because he doesn't believe Muflas and Muflish is Doraita, he just believes that it's true the Chumra, but not the Kula, and therefore he can't rectify Truma, even though he can create the Surim Midoraita. Where it says, lo, Kasava Rabbi Yossi, Truma, Bizmanazed, Rabbanan. Who says that Rabbi Yossi thinks that Truma Bizman says Doraita? Maybe he holds that Truma Bizman says Dirabonon. And if that's the case, then Mufla Samech Leish, which is Rabbanon, can come and solve a Dirabonon problem. You have a problem of Tebo Midrabanan, you want to take up Truma Midrabanan, Mufla Samech Leish, which is a Din Dirabonon, that is Nidarim or binding, is a fine solution for that problem. Where it says, Visova Rabbi Yossi Truma Bizman says Dirabonon, does Rabbi Yossi really believe that Truma today is only a rabbinic institution? We have a braita that's found in Seder Olam, which is a midrash that goes through basically all the dates from the beginning of creation until or a little post the Korban HaBayit, and lays out basically a history according to Chazal, which much of the Seder Olam is quoted in Chazal in the Gemara in terms of their understanding of dating and dates and time. And in Seder Olam, it says, Asher Yashua Botecha Virishta. So it says your forefathers inherited Virishta. The word Yusha appears twice. Yusha Rishona Vishniya Yeshlam. There is a Yusha in the time of Yoshua to be Makdish the land. There's a Yusha in the time of Ezra to be Makdish the land, which means that Kitcha, Kedusha Rishona, was Kitcha the Shaita Velo Latid Labo. Yoshua's Kedusha was only temporary. And then Ezra's Kedusha is permanent because Shlishit Einlam. There will not be a third Hakdasha of the land, and that's because Kedusha Shnia is Kitcha the Shaita Ulatid Labo. It was a permanent Kedusha. So you see, if that's the case, then Truma Bizman says Doraita, because the Kedusha of the Aretz stayed even post the Churban HaBayit, even post the Galut of Bnei Yisrael from the land. Vam Rav Yochanan Mantana de Seder Olam. Who is the author? Who's the Tana of Seder Olam? We have this in a number of places in Shas. It is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta is the author of the Seder Olam Rabba. And if the Seder Olam Rabba has a braita that shows you that Truma is today Midoraita because Kedusha Shnia, Kedusha the Shaita, Kedusha Latid Avo, Ezra's Kedusha of the land was permanent because there will be no third Kedusha, which means the second one was permanent, then he believes Truma Bizman Hazeh is Doraita. So how can he claim that Rabbi Yossi believes Truma Bizman Hazeh is the Rabbanan? My answer is, Rabbi Yossi Tani Lo, Velo Sabar Lo. He authored that position, but he doesn't hold of that position. Meaning that he brings down that braita in Seder Olam, but he doesn't necessarily agree with it. He doesn't necessarily subscribe to it. So if that's the case, then we're back to saying that Rabbi Yossi can hold that Truma Bizman Hazeh is the Rabbanan. If that's the case, you have Tevel Midrabanan, and you can have a solution of Mufla Samoch Tish, which is only a rabbinic institution that a child between the age of 12 and 13, or for a girl between the ages of 11 and 12, have the right to take Nidarim or Bimafrish Truma Hekdesh. I mean, these are all forms of Nidarim, manifestation of Nidarim. And even though it's only rabbinic, it could still take care of a rabbinic problem, which is Tevel Midrabanan. And even though the work that is authored by Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, Rabbi Yossi, which is Seder Olam Rabba, seems to indicate that Truma Bizman Hazeh is Doraita, because there was a Kedusha Rishona, a Kedusha Shnia, there will not be a Kedusha Shlishit, which means that Kedusha Shnia was permanent, and Truma is Doraita Ayom. That's true that it's in his work, but he doesn't subscribe to it. He quotes a Braita that he doesn't necessarily subscribe to. And tomorrow, we will continue with Hakinami Mistabra, that which we're saying makes sense, because we're going to bring additional proof to what Rabbi Yossi's position is. But for now, we're going to stop here two lines from the bottom of Mem Vav Amud Bet.